No, I can't smile without you. I can't smile without you. Oh, I'm recording. This is an episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. I didn't expect the mic to work, but it's working. So you got a little bit of my Barry Manilow. So I haven't done one of these in, I think it's been over a week. It's been a while. I wasn't going to do one tonight because Barb didn't go to yoga. I usually do it during yoga because it just feels weird when I'm walking around pacing, talking to myself, and she's there watching TV. It's just strange. But anyway, I decided to do the Lord's work and get this episode out. And I got quite a few things to talk about. I was recently in another Vantage press release review. And this is from, this was $3 back in the day. And really, like, it's not a lot of material. It takes you, like, no time to read. It's not like a Wizard magazine. I know that was, like, $3 more. But I'm trying to find the date on this. Oh, it's October of 1994. And on this cover, it has, "Where's McFarlane? You think you know? Guess again." So that's the highlight. And you know what? I read half of this, and I didn't even see that article in here. It is interesting. Maybe it was in the first page, and I just didn't see it. Maybe it merely is literal meaning, like, where is McFarlane? He doesn't show up in this issue whatsoever. There is an Image article in here that I want to talk about, which was fairly interesting. Ooh, there was a techno. I missed a whole page in here. So, and if you're a Disney fan, there was an interesting article. Yeah, but I still can't find the article on Todd McFarlane. So, where's McFarlane? He's not in our magazine. And this one was interesting because usually there's like this seal that I told you is really hard to take off. This one had been open before, which is good because that seal was stressing me out, like I would damage the book. Let somebody else deal with that seal because it's sticky as shit. Like, it's really sticky. So what is Vantage? It's a speculator magazine from the 90s, and it's just so damn entertaining because these guys, man, they might have been short-term speculators, but they had no long-term picks. So the top pick of the month, which I think was hot at the time, was Image did this Image X month, and that was when all the artists switched books, and that's one of the articles I want to talk about. But their Vantage picks were Aster number one from Eternity or Factual. That was their top pick. And you know what? There's an article in here with the artist. He's from the Philippines. And I really liked what I saw. So I queued up. I'm gonna buy Aster and see what it's about. Most of it was just focused on the art and not the writing, but it looked really interesting. The other one, I have no evidence of it ever being published, even though there is a Black Raven comic book. It's a Black Raven comic book that's published way in the future, so it can't be this one. And I tried to search for it, and I don't think it exists. So they speculated on something that never came out. It's called a Black Raven. And the Black Raven that I know out, that they this one is published by Mad Monkey Press. And the one that is in my database is in 4 years later from Artifact. And the cover looks pretty doggone sweet. I have no idea what it is, but it's a guy shooting out of a car, simply while he's passing under a bridge, and it looks really cool. I'd like to see some of the interiors on this sucker, but it might get me to purchase something that I wouldn't have thought about. So Aster, I'm going for. Black Raven, I may get, but it's not the same one. There is no Mad Monkey Press. There actually is a Mad Monkey Press. If I search for it, Mad Monkey. And they did books like The Acolyte. They did Darktown, Alfred the Return, Magician's Village, Masquerade, and Samurai between the years of 1992 and 1996. So, like, if I just pick something, let's go to their early Masquerade. It's a Canadian publisher, and it looks like it ran only 2 issues with an ashcan and a special edition. Let's look at their latest one, which was 1996. It's a Samurai, and that's just 1 issue. This one does look pretty doggone cool, though. It's very anime looking, but I like the cover. It's by Barry Blair from 1996. So their second choice probably never happened. That's my guess. Black Raven from Mad Monkey Press never happened. The next one is Disney-based comics. That's speculation-wise. There's an article about this, and I think the pages were stuck together, and I missed this page. They talked about long-term investments, nostalgia of tomorrow, and they had a modern-day checklist of Disney and then Marvel. The irony of the situation is now Disney owns Marvel, and Disney had Beauty and the Beast graphic novel from 1992, Beauty and the Beast number 1 and 2 from 1992, Little Mermaid graphic novel from 1990, and Little Mermaid 1 through 4. So let's see if what these things are at. And my database is conservative, but I wouldn't say it's the most accurate. So this one was Marvel's Beauty and the Beast. It's weird on this one. In my database, number 1 is not worth too much, but number 2 is. It's 850. Number 3 is worth $24. Number 4 is 950, and then you get into double digits, and that ran for 13 issues, so that could be a legit pick, I think. The cover price was, as I mouse over my database, $1.50, so that could be legit. It says Disney's Beauty and the Beast, but it's really Marvel's. Looks like there's quite a few of Beauty and the Beast. Let's go to the graphic novel. This graphic novel is from what year? It doesn't even tell me the cover date. But I bet you this is the one they're talking about, and that's only worth $6.50. So, yeah, they've gone up in price, but and then Aladdin 1 through 4 at Marvel. I didn't even know Marvel had an Aladdin comic. I'm real curious about that because of the movie. And when you hear like a bling, that's because I can't type and talk at the same time. So I imagine that's Disney's, yeah, that's Marvel's Aladdin. That ran for like a couple years, from 1994 to 1997. But I think it was not like it would come up, come an issue, and then it'd be a while, and then, well, it looks like 1 through 3 were sequential, and then 4 came out in 1995, and 5, yeah, so it took a while to published, but it ran through 1995, late 1994 to 1996, with some specials in there. But those prices are, they're decent, especially towards the tail end of the run. And investment-wise, if you get the last issue in the penultimate, just from a person that's been buying a lot of back issues, they're the most expensive because the print runs are low. They know they're canceling it for a reason. There's low print runs, and there's more demand there for those issues because there's less of them out there. So if you want to complete a run, yeah, the earlier issues aren't worth anything. You get to the later issues, they're pretty expensive. So maybe they were right about these Disney books, at least from the Marvel perspective. And then they talked about Techno Comics. That's something that I have issues of, but not full runs for sure. I poked my head in. They don't even mention the one that I did. It was a Garth Ennis book, I thought. Let me see if I can pull up Primordials. I know I don't own any of that. I think that was Leonard Nimoy. But if I pull it up, say I have none of Primordials. It's another dead universe I'd like to poke around in. Lady Justice was my book. Okay. That's the one where I have more of them than any other book. And that was not Garth Ennis. It was C.J. Henderson. If there was another volume of this. Because I just remember, I thought it was Garth Ennis. Dan Brereton did the second volume. Is there a third volume? I don't think so. So I don't know what I'm talking about Garth Ennis, but I do own Lady Justice. And she was like blind, and she had this blindfold on her. And those are dirt cheap, man. I could probably jump on these and get them for like $1.70 on mycomicshop.com. Something else I might look at. If I was going to complete anything, I would probably complete that one. More than any others. But they did iBots. I don't think I have any of those. Lost Universe, that's Gene Roddenberry. Didn't do any of those. Mike Danger, Mickey Spillane. Now this one I might be really interested in. Just because it's got that like crime noir feel. Oh, these are nice covers. I think that I need to get some Mike Danger. Max Allen Collins. This is what I need to get. Even before Lady Justice, Mr. Hero is another one. The New Manic Man and Lost Universe. So this was their... Big Entertainment has announced their first three. So this article was based on when they were launching, before they were launching. And then the other interesting article is in the first issue of Vantage. This is like number 6, and it's the second volume. When I talked about Vantage Comics, it was volume 1. It didn't have like a color cover. It was a black and white cover. And this is the second volume of Vantage, and it has a color cover. So, totally different time period, different time frame. And they talked about, I mean, they had it right when they were talking about print runs of things. What makes something valuable is usually there's not a lot of them. Even though there's a crap ton load of Deadpool's first appearance and stuff like that, they still have value. Quite a bit of value, you know, several hundred dollars to get that book. So even though the print run was high on some of these, but they talk about, you know, things like that. They talked about Triumphant Doesn't Triumph. And The Vantage actually tried to call their phone line, find out what was going on, and nobody answered. And they did interview a few people about Triumphant, and that's the universe that I just completed recently. When the comics were coming out in the 90s, I dabbed in it. I was going to a comic shop called Doc's News, and it was on Gibson, on right outside Kirtland Air Force Base in Albuquerque. And that particular store was, I like went to three stores in Albuquerque. And if you hear squeaking, it's Harley playing with her toys. She's really hyper because we've had some bad weather, and the walks that I've taken her on are really short. She likes to go for about, a 1.2 mile walk, and this has been like a 10 minute walk because of weather. We've had snow and rain, and our walks have been pretty bad. And now she's hyper and wants to play with her toys. That's right. So if you hear squeaking, I'm not going to stop her. If it annoys you, then hang up. Come back at another time. Because that is what it is. She'll do her thing. She's my Harley girl. I ain't going to stop her. Yeah, so it says they made several calls to them. They talked to John Riley, who wrote a lot of books, like Dr. Chaos, Chromium Man. Those were my books back in the day. I bought mostly Chromium Man, but I did. Well, anyway, Doc's News carried a lot of weird stuff. A lot of weird stuff. And I don't remember having a pull box with Doc's. I just remember getting stuff off the shelf. And, Harley Quinn! Yeah, sorry about that. I get distracted. I have the Harley disease squirrel. But anyway, they talked to John Riley and he hadn't got paid. They owed him like 4 grand. And they talked to colorists and they owed her for a year. So they went out and from what I can tell, they were looking for investors. They never got them and they couldn't pay their people, which sucks. I'd rather have a company pay their people, pay their bills, and then go out of business. But to do work and not get paid for what you just did, that sucks. Especially if at this time, like these people were relying on that paycheck to make a living. So it talked about Triumphant going out of business. It talked about Wizard effing up. This was a good article. It appears that Wizard magazine jumped the gun on who was gonna draw what in who was in the X month where they switched books. So they announced that Savage Dragon would be handled by McFarlane, Wildcats by Silvestri, Spawn by Valentino, Youngblood by Jim Lee, Shadowhawk by Liefeld, and Cyberforce by Larson. And what Vantage says is they screwed up, and it was Larson is to do Wildcats 14, Liefeld to do Shadowhawk 0, Valentino is to do Youngblood number 9, Silvestri is to do Spawn 25, and their top pick is Cyberforce done by McFarlane. So they said originally Cyberforce was by Larson. And they said because of those, they thought there were going to be low print runs on Shadowhawk number 0, which was Liefeld, and Savage Dragon 13, which was, I believe, Lee. Let me double check that. Savage Dragon, Jim Lee. So what they originally said, Savage Dragon would be Todd McFarlane, so I don't know if Jim Lee would have sold more. That was probably a wash. Shadowhawk number 0 was originally going to be done by Liefeld, but he ended up doing Liefeld, so I don't know why they're saying that's going to have a low print run. Maybe because of the content or Shadow Hawk of those properties, my guess is that Shadow Hawk sold the least. And Cyber Force was going to be underordered. That's Todd McFarlane, the big gun. And they originally said that was going to be by Larson, who's my favorite. Matter of fact, I went to go buy Megaton number 3, which is sort of his first appearance. I think I also have coming as Megaton number 2, which is kind of like Ram number 1, which is like Youngblood's first appearance, but it's only in the form of an ad. So a lot of these books are really expensive. And like Ram number 1's like a couple $100, especially if you want it graded, just because it's Youngblood's first appearance. And another one, Spawn appeared in Malibu Sun. I can't remember the issue, but that's expensive as hell. I went to go buy it, and I was like, oh, this is a little too much for my taste. I want it eventually, and I probably will get it because its historical value matters to me a lot. Like it, image at that time, it matters to me a lot. So these books are really important that they exist. And even if they show up, like if you look at Youngblood, for example, you can go to eBay right now, look up Ram number 1. And some of them will have the picture. It'll say first appearance of Youngblood. They'll have the picture of Youngblood. If you zoom in on the picture of Youngblood, it's not what actually Youngblood turned out to be. So that's fascinating in itself, like a great piece of history. I'd highly recommend getting it if you have. Matter of fact, me and Bill talked about Ram number 1 because that son of a bitch, my owns Ram number 1. I think he found it in a dollar box some time ago, and he just found it and has just found out recently it was Youngblood's first appearance. The other one is like their real first appearance, which is more important to me, and I think it's called Megaton Explosion. Who's in Megaton Comics? And this one's expensive. My database says it's $2, but go on eBay and you'll see how expensive it is. But it is really the true first appearance of Youngblood in comic form. So, this publisher, Megaton, seemed to be like the forefathers' playground, the forefathers of Image playground to play in before they said, you know, let's play with these, let's see what works out. Oh, no, we're gonna launch our own shit. And this is probably like when Marvel, you know, actually it was probably way before they got their gigs in Marvel. Like if we look at Megaton Explosion, it's got Rob Liefeld, Eric Larson, and Grass Green doing artwork. And that's 1987. Okay, let's just, I know Rob Liefeld's, one of his first works is Hawk and Dove. That was 1988. So there is a big window there. That's what makes this book like super awesome. Is yeah, Youngblood did not turn out to be what it was gonna be. Like Eric Larson was drawing Savage Dragon when he was in elementary school, I believe. But his published, if you want to get that, you want Megaton number 2 is the image, and Megaton number 3, I believe, is the story. And yeah, these books are just, they're gold mine to me. They mean so much. Some of this stuff is like way before they became popular. So it means a lot. Like this, they had these ideas before they went to Marvel and before they went to DC. Like McFarlane started off in DC. I think his first work was in Arrak Son of Thunder as a pinup. And that I have that. And I was like so excited to find out that I had it. I was like, yeah, I have Todd McFarlane's first DC work. Yeah. And then he went to Infinity Inc. And Liefeld was in Hawk and Dove. Larson was in Doom Patrol before Grant Morrison took over. And then they all migrated sort of over to Marvel and became these big names, especially like Larson followed up McFarlane on Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man, top tier book. And Rob Liefeld obviously went to New Mutants and blew that up into X-Force. So, yeah, this is. I just love comics. The 90s were such a interesting time. So that article was pretty badass. And then he talked about Disney, techno. This was an interesting one article that I read. Is Oliver Isbadara the next Billy Tucci? And they're talking about Aster, and that's the one that I want to get. They had some clips of his art, and I'm like, this looks pretty doggone cool. Some of their picks that they came up with, first they did like quickies. They talked about Rune getting switching artists from Barry Windsor Smith to Javier Salteris. They talked about a team up. This is actually fascinating. And this is something I think I want to track down. Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Star Trek Next Generation Deep Space Nine. So it was a crossover between Malibu and DC Comics. So the Malibu did obviously the Deep Space Nine, Star Trek Next Generation, and DC did Star Trek The Next Gen Deep Space Nine. They talked about Flash 100 and that issue I remember distinctively. Like I know I memorized the cover of Flash 100. They talk about a Bishop and Rogue miniseries. They had Vantage offers unique retailer incentives. I don't know what those are, but that sounds interesting. They talk about Marvel Select titles. And I think this happened for Tales to Astonish. I remember they had like this acetate plastic over the cover. I think that's the Marvel Select titles. But these ones that they mentioned, I don't remember them being Marvel Select titles except for Tales to Astonish. Like if they say there's a Bishop one. It does have a foil cover for like all four of them, but I don't know if it's a Marvel Select. But that sounds interesting. I don't own Bishop, but the creative team is pretty freaking awesome. It's John Ostrander and Carlos Pacheco. So this one from 1994 sounds really interesting, and that's the one this one's talking about. And I've talked about in the past. Me being like sort of distant with Marvel, like DC was my shit. Like it was where I would not stop usually. If I had to cut anything, it would be Marvel, or Image. And at the time in the 90s, I was big into DC. I was big into Image. I was big into Valiant. And then later on, when the years came, I was big into the Ultraverse. Everything else I would like poke myself in. And this has to do with the listener question, and I'll get more into that later on. But yeah, I talked about that. And then they would do like card picks. Cards were very big when I was in college. And just to give you an idea. This was when the Joe Jusco cards came out, and a lot of the DC cards came out. And one of the things that I think me and Barb had really fun with is we would buy an entire box back in the day, and we would open up every packet and put them into a binder, like a card binder. And I still have those card binders. I need to pull those out and show you some. Also, they picked a Punisher Year One, Hulk 2099, Batman vs. Predator 2, Mr. Punch, which I don't have, which I have so much DC stuff. That was a hardcover exclusive, 96 pages. There was only 15,000 copies printed. So that would be an interesting Neil Gaiman book to pick up. They also talked about, they had the interview with that artist that I talked about, Oliver Espadera, and I like his snippets of art. He draws a beautiful woman. Like they have a couple of pictures in here. It's pretty freaking amazing. And then they had another pick. They talk about Oblivion. It's a movie based on a Marvel comic. A Hawkman interview, which I haven't read the Hawkman interview, but I'm very interested in reading it. And then there was another comic they choose to read. It was Exile Earth. And it sounds like this guy learned how to fly and didn't use his abilities for being, for superheroics, which is interesting itself. They offered a coupon in the back for a Vantage dealer kit. You get a special report of 50 rules for running a successful table. Oh, this is like gaming tables. Special report, the best shows to sell at, 50 Vantage top pick stickers. That's about comic books. An awesome Vantage stand-up and magazine display, plus 15 copies of the most recent issue of Vantage. So they could sign up there. Bonus with every order, a free Vantage press release v number one, signed by shy artist Billy Tucci. Interesting. And what the thing I like about this magazine is its total focus was on retailers. Like, as much as they were allowing other people to buy this, their focus was helping the retailer make picks, which I found pretty exciting and amazing. So I'm going to tell you about my latest order. This was an order that I talked about in Geek Brunch. Me and Bill were going through Advance Comics, and a lot of these came from it. But I picked up a full run of Xenozoic Tales, Mark Schultz, and I didn't pick this up back in the day. I didn't care about Kitchen Seat Comics. Now I've corrected that error. That should be fun. Actually, what led me is this thing called the Mike's Rabbit Hole, and I go down rabbit holes so much, that's why I change what I want to read a lot. But I went down the rabbit hole of reading Zorro, and Zorro led me down to Roy Thomas on Cadillacs and Dinosaurs, and I said, I must get this. They weren't the creators of Xenozoic Tales. The Cadillacs and Dinosaurs came from Xenozoic Tales, and I think Marvel just changed the name, put an Epic brand on it. So if you go find Epic Comics Cadillacs and Dinosaurs, what it really is are reprints from Xenozoic Tales. So I skipped that. I said, I don't want the reprint. I want the real shit. I'm going to go to Xenozoic Tales, get that full run. And then I said, ooh, Cadillacs and Dinosaurs. And I jumped on that. And then I found out that Xenozoic Tales wasn't the first appearance. And I ordered Death Rattle, which is their first appearance. And I bought that. Me and Bill were enjoying talking about Vantage so much that I picked up another 5 issues of Vantage, and you just heard about one of them. I want to complete my continuity universe. I have quite a bit, but it wasn't very good at keeping up with it, and it was very sporadic. It just would ship. So as somebody that would pull stuff off the shelf around this time at Doc's News, it was so sporadic that I just wouldn't remember, and I'd pick up what I could, and it wasn't a lot. And then we discovered a publisher called Anarchy, And we picked up, I picked up Necromancer, and James Barr did a cover of Necromancer, and it's so beautiful. I had to buy two covers of that. And I can't remember what the other one was. I finished my Zorro run from Tops. I only needed two issues of that. I decided to buy Dracula versus Zorro, which was also at Tops, which is two issues plus a special, which is really just reprinting the two issues, but I have them both. I bought all the Cadillacs and Dinosaurs minis. There's three volumes of that. I almost completed my Silver Sable run on the second one. I think I'm only three issues out from completing Silver Sable. I bought the first issue of Venom, The Enemy Within, so that completed my run. I bought Namor number 60, which completed my Namor the Submariner. I still have to work on the Submariner series, the original, the 12 cent issues that spawned off of Tales to Astonish. And I have the most expensive ones. I have like 1 through 5. And I was really close, and I just never finished it. I need to go back and finish it. Because I'm on this Zorro kick, I bought Marvel's full run of Zorro. I didn't even know they had a full run of Zorro until I started poking around. We were inside of Advance Comics, and I love Rocketeer so much that I found this comic called Rocket Ranger, and I looked at the covers and it looked pretty amazing. I haven't even opened it yet, so I'm opening this live. And I believe all the Adventure Comics were black and white. This one is not black and white. And looking at the art, it looks very interesting. And there's a lot of ads for other things. And this is based on a video game. And I'm just awed by the advertisements. Because there's a lot of magazines in here that I wouldn't have thought of. And Adventure Comics was a brand of Malibu. And I think the only one that I ever bought off the shelf was Miss Fury. And maybe a couple of Planet of the Apes. They did a black and white Planet of the Apes. I don't own all of the Planet of the Apes. I bought another issue of Siphons, which I'm glad I brought this one up, because I think I have in my want list the same issue, and I need to remove it. So this proves very valuable to me as I am going through my comicshop.com. They have like my want list, and I usually queue those up with ones they don't have. Right now I'm queued up with a few of Brat Pack number 4, because I want to complete it. It's the only issue of Brat Pack. Blazing Battle Tales from Atlas Comics. A couple of issues of Blue Ribbon Special, a GI Combat, some Justice League, and then my Mr. T's, which I'm having a hard time filling. But I know that Siphons, yeah, I need to take this off. Number 3, it's. I have it. What that helps me do is, when I go through my want list to add, I don't accidentally order a second copy. So see, this podcast helps me out. I completed my Werewolf by Night. I had to get number 6 and number 7. So I'm very happy to complete my Werewolf by Night. That might not include, I think there's a couple issues of Giant Side Werewolf by Night. I don't have those, and they're not listed as annuals. They're actually listed as their own title, Giant Werewolf by Night. But I do have all of Werewolf by Night, and there was a Marvel Spotlight before Werewolf by Night came out, and I own those as well. Matter of fact, I think I own a full run of Marvel Spotlight. If I'm missing anything, it's the Doctor Who, couple Doctor Who issues, which I will get. I just not excited about Doctor Who. And then I completed my Dagger run minus one issue. It was one of those things where I thought I claimed victory and I was missing one issue. Like they just didn't fulfill the order. And Dagger was going to be hot. A matter of fact, I was looking at an old Advanced Comics under Dagger, and they had an ad where they were going. This is a very interesting issue of Advanced Comics because a lot of these publishers never came out with these books. So you do research and you're like, this looks badass. I want to get it. And it never came out. And this is probably towards the end, like when they, because I don't remember Charlemagne making it very far from Defiant. But what was I looking for again? Dagger. Dark Horse. These are alphabetically too back in the day. So they didn't give a shit if you were DC Comics or Marvel. You would go in your alphabetical order. You'd have to go through all this stuff. This is fascinating too, as they had Valeria, She-Bat, and Nighthawk. And the interesting thing about Nighthawk is it never got published by Continuity, but it's listed here. It got published by Acclaim as a Windjammer title. But I found this fascinating. A Dagger Comics. They were planning on putting out a Mavericks New Wave, and that didn't happen. With Rick Butler art. Scorpion Corps had Zine Daiquiri stuff. They were up to number 8. I don't think that had a number 8. So this is around the time of the collapse of another company called Dagger. But it said here, we are not your mainstream comics, but we are one of your best alternatives, with artists like Rich Buckler Sr., Fred Schiller, Rick Hoberg, Martin Powell, Dean Zachary, Walter McDaniel, Bart Sears, Andy Smith, Mike Grell, Rich Buckler Jr., and James Daly. I mean, the big names there for me are Bart Sears, Andy Smith, and Mike Grell. And it said Shifting Gears in 1994, and those we never saw the light of day. Very interested in this company. It was a continuity universe that just never made it. So almost completed that. I'm just missing one issue of Mavericks, I believe. And that's pretty much sums up what I was getting. There's some more in another box. Oh, what the hell? I'll go over there and see what I was missing. I have to do some comic book maintenance on one of these, actually two boxes. One of the boxes is for books that I need to inventory for new books. But here's some of the books I picked up from Aaron Myers: Fantastic Four number 85, Fantastic Four number 90, Fantastic Four number 97, 109, Amazing Adventures number 18. I am missing a few of the Kilraven Amazing Adventures. I did pick up from Tower Comics Dynamo number 1. I picked up, even though I have a full run of Deathmate, this cover just looked too cool in pink. It's a preview and it's called Deathmate Pink. August preview and from previews. There was a DC special. I've been picking up these as much as I can. This one has the Justice Society, the untold origin of the Justice Society, and it has Hitler on the cover with his Spear of Destiny. We have X-Men number 16, Time Bandits number 1. I love the movie Time Bandits from Marvel Comics. Amazing Spider-Man 16. This is the first appearance of Captain Marvel, Monica Rambeau. Marvel feature, The Thing and Iron Man, number 12. That means I only am missing number 13. It's either number 11 or 13. It's the one with the Hulk and the Thing on it. It's the only issue of Marvel feature I'm missing. And then Death Rattle, of course. That was number 8, the first appearance of Xenozoic Tales. Yeah, there was a lot of goodness, and I'm getting ready to place another order soon. And I think this is a whole box of Kickstarters, really. A short box of Kickstarters. I've been ordering a lot of those. But Having said that, that was some recent purchases, a discussion of Vantage magazine, and there'll probably be more of that. I still have a bunch to go through. I do want to finish reading the articles in this other one. There's two more articles I want to read. It pretty much takes about half an hour to read these articles. The book is probably like 16 pages. It's not a lot of pages, but it's what's the content is really powerful stuff, especially if you're a comic book historian like myself. So I'm going to get to some questions. And I got a boatload, mainly from my friend Kirk Spencer, who's a war comics specialist. I'll call him the war comics specialist. Let's start with the first one. How did you miss all these 90s comics? Did you leave the hobby for a while? The answer is no. The 90s comics I missed are shit I didn't care about back in the day. You got to remember, there was a lot of Marvel and DC coming out. That's what I cared about. I cared about Valiant. Didn't miss Valiant. Didn't miss an issue of Valiant. I cared about Ultraverse. I didn't miss any of the issues. Most of the stuff that I had to reclaim from the Ultraverse were towards the tail end. For some reason, I stopped getting stuff towards the tail end during that Marvel Ultraverse merger. I felt the quality of the books had died down, and I had to go back and buy that tail end right towards when Ultraverse was getting ready to sell. Malibu was getting ready to sell to Marvel. Will you get Peepoy to sign your splatter? I talked about Splatter Comics from North Guard. It was either North Wind or North Guard Comics on Geek Brunch recently. Probably not. Peepoy is a good friend of mine. He signed all of his work that I have, commissions and stuff like that. And I'm not big on having somebody sign my comics. I understand what they mean. It's very personal. A lot of people like to get them signed to sell them. For me, I'm not really into signatures. I really am not. So when people say, oh, I have a signed issue of this, yeah, there's a couple of signatures I would like, but I guess the only one that I would really like is like a Jack Kirby on a Fantastic Four or something like that. And I don't think I'd want a signature if I wasn't there, for sure. Like, if somebody says I have a Jack Kirby or a Bob Kane signature book and it's not, and I wasn't there to get the signature, then I really don't care. It's not. It doesn't have that personal feel. It just seems like it's something that was signed for somebody else, and it's not for me. So that's how I feel about signed comics. How about V Hill? Tim V Hill. What I know him from is he's a nasty boy. He draws Faust. He draws some nasty shit. But he's a brilliant artist. I mean, his line is, damn, he can draw good. I was picking up Faust from Docs News back in the day. They had like an X-rated section of comics at Docs News. They had X-rated videos in Docs News. I never went back there, but they had X-rated videos. They had X-rated comics. And Faust was always in that X-rated section. And I bought from Rebel Comics Faust issues. I don't even think they were called like issue one, issue two. They're called act one, act two, act three. Originally it was printed by Northwind or North Guard. I can't remember. Northwind, I think, is the name. And I don't have any of those, but I did get in on it when it was, and it was mostly rated X because of its nudity, sexual content, and violence. It was a violence book. If you see Faust, this fucker had like Wolverine claws, and they were huge, man. And he would just like carve up shit like you wouldn't believe. And that's what I knew V. Hill from. And then also from Docs News, I was buying EO, and there were only two issues of that. I picked up I picked up one, but two came out and I never got it. So it's something that I might go to mycomicshop.com to complete. I will look to complete my splatters, by the way. I'm very interested in completing those. All right. And the only other X-rated book that I ever played around with back in that day in the 90s was a book called Rambaugh. I don't even think that fucker's in my database. I have quite a few issues. Rambaugh. No, I have almost a full run of this fucking book. It was from Eros Entertainment, bought off the shelf in 1992. It was 14 issues. I have roughly 9 of them. I have 1 through 9 minus issues 6. And the description of this book reads, Rambaugh is an adventurer who has casual sex with many different partners as she rights wrongs and dispenses justice. Often scantily clad and sometimes unclad, she has the sensibilities of Batman and the rapacious, I don't even know what that word is, RAPACIOUS, rapacious, I guess, libido. And they talk more about her libido, and it says on the upside, the artwork by Mario Llorente is gorgeous. And I'll tell you right now, the artwork is brilliant. Like, it's mind-blowingly sexy. They compare him to legends Gary Morrow and Russ Heath. So whoever wrote this review is comparing him to like Gray Morrow, sorry, and Russ Heath, to some big ass names in comics, drawing porn. So Rambaugh. And so I hope that answers your question about the 90s. I was pro I'd be surprised if you bought more comics in the 90s than I did. That's how much I was buying. It's just the stuff that I'm poking around on Twitter right now is stuff like I didn't even care about back then, but I'm really fascinated with now. I was very in the 90s, I was very into continuity. So like if you had a shared universe like Image, which the heroes were in a shared universe, I wanted to be there. If you had Valiant, I wanted to be there. Ultraverse, I wanted to be there. Other things I just poked in and I left like I wouldn't stick with. Like I played around in Triumphant. I played around and that was a shared universe. They had a crossover. So yeah, I didn't play with a lot of indies back then. It was mostly Marvel in DC, and when times got tough and studying, I was in college at the time. I stuck with my Valiant, my DC, and my Image. And Marvel tend to go into the. I bought a lot in the 90s that I didn't even read. But I stuck with the big ones in Marvel. Like I'd get Thor, I'd get Spider-Man, I'd get Cap, I'd get Avengers. I dipped my toe into like a lot of the Marvel Midnight Suns and all kinds of stuff like that, Punisher. And now I'm completing a lot of runs, so you probably see me completing a lot of 90s books lately because especially in the Marvel side because I didn't care about them back then. I was a different person. I'm a very different person now. Back then, I budget was fixed in college. There was only so much I can buy. I still bought a shit ton, but I was more limited in what I could buy. Most of the stuff I picked up off the shelf. So I don't even remember having a pull list there. I really don't. But I must have because I didn't miss many issues, and I remember the guy that ran the shop. There were two dudes, One of them, I remember I called him the milk and cheese dude because, man, this guy just loved milk and cheese. And then there was this rocker guy. I don't remember his name, but I would talk to him for hours. He had long hair and he knew a lot about music and stuff, and he liked to read comics. It was an unusual store, and I think it catered towards being right outside the military base, but I enjoyed it. I had a good discount there. And I think the main reason I went there wasn't because it was closer to my school or anything. I think I went there because I got tired of the bullshit that was happening at Tall Tales. The hippie guy with the cocaine nail at Tall Tales, I used to like. His name was Dave. And I liked him a lot. And he used to own the store. But this New Yorker guy, Jeff, came in and he started pushing Dave out. Like, I think he was buying him out. I think what happened is Dave went to jail for something. And I think that maybe it was cocaine. I don't know. He had a huge cocaine nail. I remember Jeff starting to take over the store, and this is when I got pissed because I would pre-order these books from my Advanced Comics. I said, I want this, this, and this. And yeah, I would get a shit ton, and it would all go into my pull box, except if a book was hot. That motherfucker would pull out. Even though I pre-ordered months in advance, he'd pull out that book and sell it for like 10, 20 bucks. And I know he was doing this because it never happened when Dave was there. It was when Jeff took over. And I was like, God damn it. And that's when I left to I left Tall Tales to go to Doc's News. I was tired of that bullshit. And so that's what happened in the 90s. That was a long answer. Are you excited about the return of roast beef sandwiches at Hardee's? No, because we don't have Hardee's. We have Arby's over here, and they're all roast beef sandwiches. So I don't care. I think Hardee's and Arby's. I can't remember if Arby's and Hardee's are. I think Hardee's is a sub sales directory of Carl's Jr. Or there's some relationship in there. And to me, an Arby's is better than a Hardee's, so I'm not excited about that. I don't have Hardee's over here, and I'd rather have an Arby's. And when I do, when I was in high school and I was playing basketball, when I was very, very young, my parents would take me to Wiener Schnitzel, and there was an Arby's across the street. And this is when I was young, around 5 years old, 6 years old, seven, I only ate. I was like one of those kids that would say, I only want to eat X. I would eat my mashed potatoes. Like, my mom would either make homemade mashed potatoes to suffice, or she would make that powdered box of potatoes. But that's what I would eat. Like, I think for 2 years, I just wanted mashed potatoes. And that's what I ate. I still love potatoes. Like, potatoes are the shit, and they're not good for you. They're lots of carbs. Unless you're on that potato diet and then you take those cold showers and do all that bullshit, then it's slightly different. But I like my mashed potatoes, and Wiener Schnitzel was right across there, and I would get a hot dog. I liked hot dogs, but man, as soon as my dad made me try an Arby's roast beef sandwich with the Arby's sauce, I was blown away. And then later on, when I was in high school, I swear I weighed like 120 pounds in high school, and I could eat like constantly. I could eat 24 hours a day, and I was burning so much calories because I played basketball. Pretty much from like 2 p.m., like there was a 6 period class in high school, all the way until 10 p.m. at midnight. Like, the practice would last until 8 p.m. I'd come home, and the neighborhood kids were on the basketball team, at least my close friends. Interesting enough, though, my real close friends were a year older and a year younger. So basketball-wise, like when I was in JV, my best friends were either in varsity or in C team. And it's weird how all that worked out. But we'll get to that's enough hardies. We'll get to the next question. What was your first commission you bought? This can be a hard one to remember, but I believe it was from Tom Scholey. And I don't even know what led me to Tom Scholey. I think he was sitting right next to Eric Larson, and it was around the time that Godland was really big, and I was kind of blown away. I really didn't find a huge love for Jack Kirby until probably my sophomore year in college. I was going to a lot of hotel cons, and I went into this Jack Kirby Fourth World thing where I just wanted to buy all the Mr. Miracles. I just wanted to buy all the Commandy. I just wanted to buy the New Gods. I wanted to get the Jimmy Olsen issues. I was just infatuated with his art. And I think when Godland came out later on, and I started to go to cons, and I can't remember when our first con was. It was like Heroes, a real con was San Diego Con, but me and Barb didn't know what we were doing. We were just there, blown away. It was so much stimulation for the eyes that I didn't know what I was doing. We went there 2 years in a row. And it wasn't until Geek Brunch, we had a meeting of Geek Brunch, me and Heath Holland, and we used to have a thing called Brunch Buddies. A bunch of us just went to North Carolina at Heroes Con. And that was my first real con, like where I experienced, to me, Heroes is a comic con. Like that's a comic con. There's no actors, there's no weird stuff. There's comics. And there's an artist alley. That's what Heroes is, man. I think he was either sitting next to Eric Larson. I think he was right next to Eric Larson. And I was too shy at the time. My first con, I didn't know how to really go up to people and sound like now I don't give a shit. But then I was a little more intimidated to talking to creators and saying, I really like your work, and I'd stumble over my words because I didn't know what the hell I was talking about. So I didn't really go to like Savage Dragon, Eric Larson. I was too scared. But I watched him. I watched him draw because he was drawing commissions. He holds that pencil really fucking weird. And I was infatuated. And Tom Scholey was there, and I knew I loved his work. And, because it reminded me of Kirby. And I was like, you know what? I'd like a commission of two of the. I was a huge fan of the Superpowers collection. And there was a Super Friends cartoon. And I think this cartoon ran right after Challenge of the Super Friends. And it was an era where they focused on Darkseid, and the two main characters, the bosom buddies of that cartoon, were Firestorm and Cyborg. Yeah, what an odd couple. And I still remember some of those cartoons. So I think my first commission was I asked Tom Scholey if he could do a Cyborg and a Firestorm, and he did an awesome. And this is when his commissions were hugely affordable. I think I paid $40 a commission back then, and now they're like 300. So that just tells you how inflation goes. And also the reason why I kind of went away from commissions, they don't mean to me as much as they did back then. And most of the time, I pick a commission, it'll have to be from one of my big five, or I don't really care. I just don't. I'd rather buy old comics. That's my mode right now. But if I can get a peepoy, I'll always get a peepoy. Okay, so he's one of my go-to guys. But Tom Scholey, I asked for two commissions. I think those were my only two commissions that I bought at that convention, and I asked for two. One was a Superman, a Jimmy Olsen, and he had a signal watch, like where Jimmy Olsen's going to signal watch, and it has Superman flying right over him. Very Kirby-esque. His style has changed somewhat. It's still Kirby-esque, but he's doing like a crayon type, like coloring that makes it look a little different. Very different from like an American Barbarian page, as opposed to his Transformers versus G.I. Joe and his GoBots. You'll see the style sort of change. I still get his stuff. I'm still a huge fan of Tom Scholey, and I always will be. So that hope that answers your commission. Oh, this is when my wife and it. Wow, this is a real dark question. I don't know if I want to go there, but Kirk says, "When my wife inevitably leaves me, will you pick up Iowa's Joe and come down and help me sort comics?" I probably couldn't. I would love to go help you sort comics, but I wouldn't love the circumstances in which that is happening. But hopefully, if that does happen, it happens when I retire because I won't have the time to take off to go help you sort comics. But hopefully, if everything goes as planned, I'm about 6 or 7 years from retirement, optimistically, probably 9 years realistically. But hopefully, that happens. Why is there no ongoing Indiana Jones comic? Probably licensing fees and the fact that it probably wouldn't sell. Let's be honest. Me and you would buy a copy, and I bet it would sell in the 10,000s, probably 12,000. Maybe issue one would hit 20,000, and then it would deteriorate down there. So that it would be a title very much, I think, in the G.I. Joe sales numbers, which isn't great. But who knows? If somebody could pick it up, probably see IDW. Dark Horse had, I think, the last license on Indiana Jones. It went from Marvel to, which I have a full run of. I don't have a full run of the Dark Horse stuff, but it's something I am interested in picking up at some point. Just you know this, but I just finished the Indiana Jones, the Further Adventures of Indiana Jones from Marvel Comics. I was missing a lot of the tail run, the tail end of it, and I finished it, I think, about a year and a half ago. So I'll get to the next question. I don't think I'm going to talk about what I read for the week. I think I'm just going to release this episode as is, because there's so many questions. Why don't more people love Sergeant Rock, Jonah Hex, and Atari Force? It's just because they're genres that don't sell. I mean, it's all about what would sell. I think if that first Dynamite run of Atari Force, where they reprinted the old Atari games that came in the cartridge, the original Atari Force, I think if it sold well, they would have somehow justified doing the DC. But I also think, this is me personally, it's based on nothing, that there's some other weird clause with Atari Force and DC that prevented Dynamite from publishing a Garcia Lopez Atari Force. I really do. I really believe there was some complications, and Dynamite just said, "Fuck it. I don't want to deal with it. I'm not going to do it." Jonah Hex, I think he's had, they've given him as much chance as they possibly can, and even though the sales numbers were shitty with Palmiotti and Gray, they kept pumping it out, just because they said, you know, we want a Western to be out there. It's just that it didn't sell. It's to be honest, it. I guess you could say it's one of those ones that sells consistently to the same people, But it doesn't have like those big sales numbers. When you have to tell your boss, here's what this comic's selling, they're like, and at their heart, you gotta look at what Dan DiDio and Palmiotti and Gray, they want to keep publishing it. But then they have the bean counter over there, and he's saying, well, you know what? How, we got to put food on the table for all these people, all the investors, everything. This book is not profitable. Let's cut it. Sergeant Rock, same thing. I don't think that a World War II comic would sell. It would sell, like I said, in the 10,000 range to those fans. You'd think he'd have the best chance of success because of all the veterans in the military and the older crowd that would want to read some Sergeant Rock. But I think a lot of those fans are, they're aging and they don't care about comics so much anymore. There's a group of fans probably in their 40s, their 40s to 60s that I think are interested, but it's few and far between, I think. I just wish they would give a Sergeant Rock throw us a bone, you know, like on any of these books, just give us a fifth. If you're worried about losing money, give us a fifth week event, one of those ones where there's 5 weeks, and they instead of picking a Batman book or Batman villains or whatever else, let's say we're gonna dedicate it to DC War Heroes Month, and just see what it does. You know, get some hot creators on it. Say, do one shots of Sergeant Rock, Unknown Soldier, The Losers, a Haunted Tank. Any of those properties, and just let it. Let's see if any of those books have hit with the crowd. And if some of them do, maybe it's like a trial thing. You know, man, Sergeant Rock sold so well. We'll start a mini, and then just give us a chance with the 4-issue mini based on that fifth week event. And if that does okay, then maybe give him a chance to go to a 12-issue mini and just go from there. I think they should do that, even if it's just to keep their property in the limelight. Just say, hey, we don't want anybody stealing this character from us. We need to keep him out there somehow. That's what I think they should do. Just throw us a bone. They could do the fifth week event for Jonah Hex too, and call it like the DC Western Heroes. You know, have the Tiger Twins, Cinnamon, Scalp Hunter, Jonah Hex, Batlash. I mean, you could do like, you know, those five characters and just see how it does. See if anything just spawns out. If there's some life there. Who knows, Kirk, you could buy 50,000 copies and maybe start a trend. And they'll think, hey, it's selling great. Atari Force, I think they lost the license. I don't think we'll ever see it from DC. If somebody does do it, probably be like Dynamite or whoever's willing to try. I don't think it's going to be a big seller. But if you did do something like Garcia Lopez cover or something, you know, to launch it. I think it would spark the interest of some old fans. It's all about trying to market to a dying fandom. I hate to say it that way, but my friend, we're getting old. And this younger generation, they don't give two fucks about the comics. They'd rather spend their be plugged into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And to be honest with you, we'd be in that same boat if we, I honestly think if we grew up when they did versus when we did. And we're blessed. We are truly blessed to have grown up in an era where comics were still a thing, because I do not think in today's era, it could ever survive with the younger generation, just because unless you make it emotion, you gotta stimulate. They need more stimulation than we did back then. We didn't have all these video games and shit. We had to work for our entertainment. We had to set our internal clocks off to go watch a TV show. If Battlestar Galactica was on, there was no recording that shit. You had to be there. You had to watch the $6 Million Man live as it came out, unless your brother sticks a fucking crayon up his nose and makes you go to the hospital, and you miss an episode of the $6 Million Man, and you never missed an episode of that before. That's what happened to me. I have the DVD set, and when I watch that episode, finally, I'm gonna call my brother and say, "Hey, I finally watched this episode of the $6 Million Man, 'cause I missed it because he shoved a crayon up his nose." And we couldn't get it out with anything because he kept on snorting it. It kept on, "Breathe out, blow your nose." And he'd go, in order to blow it out, he would have to blow it in, and he'd suck it. I think he sucked that lead crayon up and it hit his brain. It was so far up there that we had to go to the emergency room, and that's expensive. So, if my dad had to take my brother to take a crayon out of his goddamn nose and he couldn't use the tools in the garage to do it, it was far up his fucking nose. But yeah, we had to work for our entertainment. We played. We did stuff physically. I think physical media means more to us than a lot of people growing up today. They're into minimalism and which is more practical. You can carry thousands of comic books on your iPad, and instead of lugging around boxes like we like, it's just a dying thing. And I just hope that the LCSs, like Martin talked about this on Comic Talk today, about the digital market, and it was all spawned off by Matt Hawkins talking about 40% of Top Cow sales are from LCSs, and he's really the only one that's ever come out and said that. But then he keeps quiet on what the rest is. That's some fucking bullshit. I wish he would just tell us literally. Oh, we get 40% from LCS. We get another 30% from Amazon, probably ordering his swingers and sexual books. I get those from the LCS, but he sells a lot of those books, I hear, to like sex clubs and all kinds of stuff, like just getting them into comics. But so maybe let's make a guess. 40% LCS, let's say 30% like Amazon or Barnes and Noble, and then whatever else is digital. So yeah, it's maybe 30, 30, 40. And I'm grouping digital like everything. Comixology, Humble Bundle, all that distribution. That would be what my guess is. For somebody like Top Cow, because if somebody wants like a darkness trade, they're not going to typically go to their LCS and spend full cover price. They just won't. And they'll pre-order it and then save with an LCS based on a discount, like DCBS. They'll get 40%, 50% off of that trade. Or they'll go to Amazon where it's already discounted. That's what most people, I think, will do. So I think if I had to guess it, Top Cow's distribution, I would say 40, 30, 30. But it could be more like 40, 50, 10, with digital being a bigger part. I don't know. Everybody's so scared of saying they're telling their competition on how much they're selling digital. I'd say have some cojones and just fucking say it. Like, fuck these LCSs that say, "Oh, you're supporting the digital market." Hey, these people need to live. They can't. They can't help that technology's changed. They can't help that services are available such as Comixology Unlimited, Marvel Unlimited, and DC Universe Online. Those services, and DC Universe is getting badass. It is getting like Marvel Unlimited, just that a little bit slower and a longer term for updates. So instead of being 6 months, they're a year, but they at least have a plan. And if you're not like that Wednesday Warrior, who cares if you're fucking reading a year in the past? Most people don't, unless you feel like you have to read. I mean, the podcast community, I mean, how much are there of us? There's thousands of podcasts, probably hundreds of listeners, but I think there's more podcasts than listeners. That is truth. So I don't even know what my listenership is. I know that Kirk listens, so thank you, Kirk. I know that there's a few people that listen, maybe 10. I don't know. I don't check the numbers. But I know there's at least 10 people, because I'll get a comment back from some people saying, yeah, I listened to this. I know Reed listens, because he's always like, oh, you're into, you want to get some Shy comics? I got some Shy comics to sell you. So I know Reed will listen to Geek Brunch and this occasionally. So he listens. I think Martin and Nick listen. I don't know if there's any other listeners. So I got like, I'll name five listeners. I got five. Kyle, I think Kyle listens, my host on DC Spotlight. He's one of the biggest supporters I've ever had, period, on any podcast. He's always retweeted my podcast, even before he was on my podcast. He's always been a strong supporter of Geek Brunch, DC Noise, Mike M's Weekly Reads. I appreciate that. But I don't even know where I'm going. I'm walking around talking some shit, and it's getting late. It's almost 10 o'clock. It's almost time for me to go to bed. But let's see if I can marathon through some of these other questions. Did you ever get a comic when you were young that you were afraid would get you in trouble with your parents? I was terrified my folks would confiscate Howard Chaykin's American Flag. No, because my parents never looked at my comics. And I guess the only time that I think it, like if my mom saw in college that I was reading Rambo, I had to be sneaky with Rambo because that was rated X. So if she saw an issue of Faust or Rambo in my college years in the 90s, she would probably freak. She would freak. And I did live at home. As I was going to college, which was very beneficial. My dad told me very early on in high school, he said, son, I really want you to go to college, but I can't pay for you to go to college. But what I can tell you is there's scholarships and grants, and you can do X, X, Y, Z. You can work hard and do your grades. You can probably get a scholarship for 4 years of education. But he said, you know what I will do for you, son? He said, you can stay here as long as you like while you're going to college, if you choose to go to college here. And you won't have to worry about groceries. I mean, you'll still have to pay your car insurance and stuff, but you'll have a roof over your head and you'll have food on your plate. And you know what? That worked out well. And why did it work out well? Because I didn't pay a dime for college. I didn't get out of college and owe anything. I didn't owe any loans. And that speech meant a lot because he's always been, you got to work hard for what you want. I worked hard, and I ended up learning about scholarships that were out there from a counselor. I applied for everyone I could possibly apply for. I went and targeted what I needed, so I paid my way through college. And then I did good in high school, so I got a presidential scholarship. So, no, I don't think I got a presidential. Presidential was badass. It was, we'll pay for 4 years of your college, plus we will pay for your books. I think what I got was an Excel scholarship, which was all of your tuition. It didn't include the books. So it was a little bit different. But you had to maintain a 3.0 GPA, or you would be, I think the first semester that you got below that, you'd be on probation. And then if you got another below a 3.0, then you would lose your scholarship. So I was very I put a lot of pressure on myself to stay above a 3.0. Like I did whatever it takes. I worked, I did what I needed to do. I studied a lot. It took time away from reading comics, but I did have to read the comics to decompress, I'll tell you that. So yeah, I can't believe I talked all about that based on a Howard Chaykin comic, but that's what this show's about. And I appreciate these comments, Kirk, because it makes discussion points. It makes the show to me more interesting, for me personally, and that's why I do this show. It has to be interesting to me to make it worthwhile. And the reason I do this show is it's sort of a diary, without having to write it down. A diary of comics. The next one is, I get this one. This one has Iowa Joe on the comment too, so I don't know if it's a question, but I won't answer it. I get most of my new comics through pre-order. I would often order stuff in hopes of getting it signed. Now that so many creators have started changing, this has helped me cut back on orders. Have you ever bought something you hoped you could get signed? I think I already answered this. I don't like to get things signed. It has to be exceptional. For one thing, I like to go to cons that are not local. I don't have friends. Friendship is why I like to go to cons. That's the number one. I could care less about who's there. I don't even check to see who's there, to be honest. All that stuff is bonus, but I usually go there to meet friends. That's the number one thing. I don't want to lug comics with me to a convention to get signed when I'm coming back with stuff. And usually when I buy a comic, let's say I buy a 12-cent comic, I don't want a signature on it. I just don't. If there was an opportunity to get Jack or Chris Claremont or somebody, and I had an issue for them to sign, and I felt like waiting in line, like this last convention I went to get a George Perez signature, that'd be kind of neat. And I would really like to get like a Liefeld, a McFarlane, and Larson, Jim Lee, like the founding fathers of Image. I think that would be fun. And if I did pick a book, I would pick something obscure. Like if I was to get a Peepoy signature, I don't think I would take him a Fables comic. I think I would take him a splatter comic. something obscure that is more personal to me. And that's what I would do. Like if I was to, I would love to do a Liefeld one with Ram, number one, or take this Vantage comic to Todd McFarlane and say, "Where's McFarlane? You think you know? Guess again." And I'll be like, "Sign it right here." I don't even know why that's the headline of this comic. I still haven't figured it out. Where's McFarlane? Oh, and they talked about unannounced cover splits, which was interesting. One of the things made me a little more interested is I didn't realize that when Ultraverse number 2 came out, that the distribution of covers were 75-25, and Ultraforce number 2 had the whole team on a cover, and then it had just Prime, and this is when Prime had this ugly fucking bully costume. He had the cool costume, and then he had the bully costume. But I was interested, and I put that one in my queue to pick up. So I hope that answers your question. I'm not against people that sign it. Like, I don't, if that's your thing, do it. I'd rather have an art sketch with a signature than an actual comic book with a signature. And I would never, ever base my pre-orders on a signature ever. I don't even think about that when I pre-order. I just want every comic. Like, the comic book and the story and the art mean more to me than having a signature or having the creator. 'Cause I have that weird, when I grew up in comic books, I didn't care who drew it. I really didn't give two fucks about who drew it or who wrote it. I just cared about who, if it was entertaining. I really did. And it wasn't until like John Byrne, like on Fantastic Four and things like that, that I actually started, wow, there's people behind these books. And yeah, then I started to know there were people behind the books. But I never really was big into the creator aspect of it, to be honest. Like, I never was in like wanting to get a signature real bad. I think the first time I went to San Diego, I'd get a bunch of these like DC cards signed by Geoff Johns and a bunch of the DC creators. But yeah, I never really wanted them to sign my comics, and it definitely doesn't doesn't influence what I pre-order at all. And like, let's say if there's a Kickstarter, and if there's a Kickstarter level that says, oh, you could get this book for $20, a regular comic book, they sell Kickstarter anywhere from $10 to $20 really for a single issue. It's pretty expensive. And then they say, oh, for an additional five or additional two, we'll sign the thing. I never get it, the signature. I wouldn't pay $2 for a signature. So I hope that doesn't break your heart. But you're asking me the question, so I feel very differently. These are fantastic questions, though, Kirk. You're lighting it up. Top Dog or Heathcliff? This is from the Star line at Marvel. I'll go with Heathcliff. Get Along Gang or Care Bears? Actually, if we're talking about comic books, I don't even know what Get Along Gang is. These are bears of some sort from Star Comics. Wow, those are worth money. Interesting. Get Along Gang was from 1985 to 1986. And some of them are in double digits. That is interesting. Especially like the last issue. I tell you, if you're an investor, get like the buy issue two and buy the last issue and maybe the penultimate. And that's where you're going to make money. So Get Along Gang or Care Bears. That's also Star. I don't own many Star comics. Just wasn't interested. I still not. I'd rather get like a Harvey comic or like Richie Rich or something than this era that I really didn't care about. I'd say cover-wise, I like the Care Bears more. I like issue 7 because it paid tribute to like that Marvel banner that they had on the side that one month where all the covers had a character in the middle, and then they had like the whole Marvel characters around the border. I like that. Number 7 does that with Care Bears. So I like the covers of Care Bears more, and it ran more issues. And those are expensive. Issue 17 is $52. What the fuck? I don't believe this. I'm gonna go to eBay live. Well, let's go to my comic shop. Let's see what we got. If they're in stock. Care Bears. Care Bears, Marvel Star 1 through 20. They're 17 out of 20 in stock, which is good. So we're looking at $7 to $8 an issue. Yeah, my database is really inflated and out of date. Because I can almost complete every issue for $4 or higher from Fine Up. And there's not a lot of, it's hard to tell. There's not a lot of, a lot of these issues are in good condition. Because I guess kids would beat the shit out of them. When you go to very fine, they get more expensive. So they're heading towards double digits. But that trend on my database for Care Bears doesn't match reality. So that's interesting. So let me get back to where I was on the Twitter. Did you ever order comics off the TV shopping channels in the 90s? It blew my mind that there was such thing on TV. No, I did not. I did watch a few on the shopping channel when they had Mr. T on, trying to sell Mr. T and his T-Force. I found it sort of interesting, but I was like, why would I pay this and then have to worry about shipping and this bullshit when I could just get this pre-ordered from Advance Comics? Made no sense. I don't remember them being, you'll have to let me know if there were like exclusives on the shopping channel. I wasn't aware of them if there was like an exclusive cover. Did you get into rock and roll comics from Revolutionary? No, not at all. My co-host Bill did. I didn't care. I still don't. That's one area that I haven't had a desire to go down the rabbit hole. Now, if I did see a Revolutionary comic book, rock and roll comic book for like somebody that I really care about, I might change. Like if there was a Foreigner one, Foreigner 4, I would want to get that comic. What are two reasons Sergeant Rock is better than Sergeant Fury? My main reason is when you read a Sergeant Rock book, it seems like there's more heart to the story. There's more human feelings. In Sergeant Fury comics, they feel flat and not as emotional. Like, they don't carry as much emotional weight of what the war was doing. That's the main reason, and I would say artistically, even though Kirby is probably my favorite artist in the world, his Sergeant Fury stuff has never lit me on fire. Whereas Joe Kubert on Sergeant Rock, holy shit! I mean, it's so I'll say that Sergeant Rock has more heartfelt and human side emotions to it. That's my number one reason, and then the second reason is the artwork. It always felt to me like the Sergeant Fury stories were more non-realistic, and that might not be true, but that's how I always felt. I felt like it was more like a superhero book. And in all fairness, Black Hawk did become a superhero book in in the 12 cent issues at some point. And even in the New 52, they made it more of a superhero book. Will you ask fans to donate all cassettes to Matt Miner, the XVX? He's on an old tape kick. I'll ask him at Twitter at Matt Miner XVX. If you have cassettes, send them to him. But if you have a lot of like New Age, I mean, not New Age, New Wave or alternative type cassettes or classic rock cassettes, you could send them my way. I'm still a cassette guy. So send them to me before you send them to him. But if it's anything else out of those musical genres, well, I probably have most of like Depeche Mode and stuff. I don't know. You'd have to ask me if I have something. I used to buy a lot of cassettes. I still own most of them. If I threw out a cassette, It's because it was no longer listenable. Like, I couldn't listen to it anymore. It was too warped. I think that's it for question. No, there's still more. Kirk is saying, these are more his personal questions. What long-running series did you first complete? Long-running. My first series I completed that was old and Marvel was Champions, but the long-running was probably Defenders. That ran quite a while, and I completed Defenders. On the DC side, they have more legacy than. I own a lot of the DC from 1973, almost everything. But this is like a run on the DC side. If you count Batman and Detective and Superman and Wonder Woman and Flash and Green Lantern, those are some of my longest runs of DC superhero stuff, because I have everything from 1973. And the Batman and Detective, I still have about a dozen that I still need to get to complete that 1973 thing. But every comic, what I mean is every volume of that comic I have. So every volume of Action Comics, every volume of Superman, every volume of Wonder Woman. I have long-running DC runs and a lot of runs on Marvel as well. So I got quite a bit, but the first series that I remember completing, this is like a complete run. So I don't obviously own a complete run of Wonder Woman. The first one I remember completing, like in back issue bins at Dawn's Paperback Book Exchange, was the Champions. I was blown away that, first of all, that they had back issues, and then, Defenders. I've always had a soft spot, and it was one of the targets that I started early in junior high getting. And when I was in college, I was like, I want to have every Defender there is, a comic that it's ever been. So I finished it up in college. I think it was my sophomore year. I finished Defenders to have a complete run of a series. The one I'm most proud of is Daredevil, because I have every volume of everything of Daredevil. Why does no one love LFS? You are loved, my friend. I don't know why you say that. When is Scalp Hunter podcast happening? I don't know. Ask your friend. He needs to start one. I don't even know how this got involved with the Scalp Hunter, like how I got involved. I've never talked about Scalp Hunter other than owning all of the Scalp Hunter issues. I've never like broke it down and talked about Scalp Hunter. Is getting up early in the morning slowly killing you? I don't know. You can only tell that. And how many comic buddies from Twitter have you met, you later met in real life? Actually, Twitter wasn't the main reason for meeting friends in real life. It was more of the forums. The forums such as the Bullpen Bulletin Forum, Comic Geek Speak Forum, Forum for Geeks. That's where I met most of the hardcore friends that I have today. We're all coming from a forum rather than Twitter. Most of the Twitter people came later. I haven't met Kyle yet. And I haven't met Rob yet. Those are two co-hosts that I need to meet at some point. I've obviously spent a lot of time with Bill, spent a lot of time with Micah. I met Heath, who was a co-host. I met Eric, who was a co-host. I met Keith. I met Daryl. I met Chris Campbell. All the people that I podcast with. The only person, people that I haven't met that I podcast with, I've met Derek Coward. I've met Tim Terrell. I've met Vince. I've met David from Bullpen Bulletins. I did podcasts with them once. I've met a lot of the people I've podcasted with on Twitter. I don't remember when I met Reed, but I remember meeting him at Heroes Con, but I don't remember when I first started talking to Reed. I think it was just from the convention. Like, I don't think I had talked to him on Twitter or on the forums before meeting him. I've met you on Twitter, but we haven't met. We should have met because we're at the same convention, but shit, until you sent me what you look like, I had no idea what you look like. And if I don't know what you look like, it's like impossible to track you down. I make myself very visible on Twitter and Facebook. I don't hide my identity at all, so people should know what I look like if they want to come up to me at a convention. Yeah, I've met a lot of friends, mostly podcasting. I need to meet Rob. Definitely got plans in motion, and the Kyle thing should have happened. It really should have in Chicago. It fell through because of timing. What really could have happened is we should have met outside the con at a dinner or something like that, at least just to say hi if things didn't work out. If I all of my comic buddies though, they've either come from Twitter or from the forums or from podcasting, and I've met a great deal of people, mostly podcasters. Almost everybody I know is podcasted. I have met people through Twitter, but it's usually because they recognize me and not because I recognize them. Because most of the people I meet on Twitter, they hide their identity. Like you. Like, I wouldn't know what the hell you look like unless I asked you. I would think you look like Sergeant Rock, because I've seen pictures of you with the Sergeant Rock mask over your face. What is the most comics you bought in a store? Huh. Not convention or mail order, but a single store. Well, I used to get all of my order from a store. So when I was getting all of previews, it used to come from Ed's Cards and Comics. Probably just getting all of my books there. And the most I probably got was 60 a week. So, I would say about 60 a week from Ed's Cards and Comics before I switched to DCBS. Do you ever go to flea markets, yard sales, or thrift stores to look for comics? Flea markets, I've went like once or twice. I've went to the antique stuff, but it's usually not because I'm looking for comics. It's just because somebody wanted to go there and I'm going around looking for comics because I'm coincidentally there. Flea markets I go to very rarely. Yard sales almost never. Thrift stores, I don't think I've ever been at a thrift store to look for comics. So mostly get mine through online. Or people I know, or that's how I get my comics. I don't usually go to these places. I think that's it. Maybe there's one more. I think that's it. And this show is mostly dedicated to Kirk because it was a Kirk marathon of questions, and didn't know that it was gonna take all that time. So let's see what the clock says. 1 hour and 49 minutes. And I didn't even go over the weekly reads. So this episode is in the can. Not going to talk about the weekly reads. I'll try to get a short weekly reads just because I don't want to get too behind. I work too hard to get caught up, and I don't want to get really behind again. So I'll do a short one. Or the next episode, I might marathon through 3 weeks just to make it so it didn't feel like I lost a week of the weekly reads. So that's what you have coming up. Want to thank you for listening. You can reach me at Mike Myers Brunch on the Twitter. There's you still have probably a week to enter the DC Spotlight episode. It's the latest episode contest where you can win the black and white Batman figures that are the PVC ones that are released at Walmart and comic shops, and they're the mystery ones, so you never know what you're going to get when you open the bag. But I have an extra full set of them, and you can win them, you probably have to dig. You have to work hard because you had to retweet the episode of that DC noise on Twitter. And then that was one criteria, and then you had to send me at Mike Myers Brunch a drawn figure that you did yourself of your favorite DC character. And I don't give a shit that you can't draw. It could be a stick figure as long as the figure's identifiable or if you write it out. So that's how to enter. You probably have a week, well, probably like 5 days left to enter that contest after this one is posted. But you're welcome to do that. You have to go find the episode, retweet it, and then send a note to my Twitter of your drawing of your favorite DC character. Could be a headshot, it could be a whole body shot. It doesn't have to be, it's not who draws the best contest, it's the fact that you drew it and I know what character it is that's your favorite DC character. That's what matters, and that's how you'd be entered. It's that simple. And I'll be honest with you have a really good chance of winning, as I've only received one entry so far. So the probability that guy's gonna win is almost 100% right now, unless somebody comes through in the course of 5 days. I will say that it'll probably end. The contest will end. I'll just flat out say it now. It will end on the 10th of May. So you actually have more days, except I probably won't release this one till like Saturday or Sunday. So you're really losing some time. You probably have like a week, 5 days. 5 working days to get your entry in if you're interested, and you'll get all 6 figurines. You won't have to worry about spending money and finding a black and white that you don't like. You'll have a full set. You can also leave an iTunes review at iTunes. I'd appreciate that. Or just retweet the show. That's how you let me know that you're listening. You can talk to me at any time. That's how I know you're listening. You can send me questions at any time. That's feedback is really important, and lets me know you're out there. Like I know there are 10 listeners because those are the people I get feedback from. That's how I count listeners. Is I don't go look at who downloads. I don't even know what the download numbers are. I don't even host my own show, and I don't go poke Derek for the numbers. I used to a long time ago, and then I stopped giving a shit. That's how I know you're listening. So if you retweet the show, you like it, or you re talk to me on Twitter about the episode, then I know you're listening. Email, that's also a really fun way. Your emails, if you send them, I'll read them on the show at mike@comicbooknoise.com. And you can leave a note on the you can leave a comment at the website itself, which is hosted at geekbrunchpodcast.com. That's another way to leave feedback. Or on Facebook, if you type in geek space Brunch Space Podcast and click the like button. Follow the episode threads there. You can comment there and let me know you're listening. So thanks for listening, and I will talk to you again in a week. Say bye-bye. Bye-bye.